When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Welcome to Entitled to Overcome, Exploring Solutions for Life Today, a presentation of Take 12 Recovery Radio. And now, here are your co-hosts, Dave Fleming and the Monty Man.
Somebody's birthday. Dave Fleming is in the house. Also, Roger McDermott from Southern California is on the phone. Dave, you just celebrated a milestone, true?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How many years sobriety, brother?
One day.
Come on, tell us how many
17 years, man.
17 years, you get a cowbell, you get a party quacker. Thing
party quacker
cowbell yeah. Oh, and you get this too. You love one of them.
That's the bell for my angel.
Yeah, there's your angel bell, and this is from down under. There you go. From everybody, happy.
I gotta check my shorts.
Happy birthday! Congratulations on 17 years, man. Good for you.
Yeah, it's
one day at a time, stringing them together.
It's crazy that, you know, it's like, it doesn't seem like it's been that long.
Right.
You know, I still remember, like, what I was doing when I started, which is a good thing, so.
What was that, Genesis? I remember. That's all I remember how the song goes. well, we do a little ditty before the theme song, Stand By Me. And the reason I stuck that in there was because, really, to do this thing, we can't do it by ourselves. And 17 years, you've done it by people standing by you, true?
Yeah, propping me up sometimes. And that's that right there is the quote of the day, I guess, because I wasn't able to do it at all until I surrendered and asked for help.
Yeah.
And then got involved, got in the game and participated. And even though I didn't know what the heck was going to happen or how it was going to turn out.
And the hand of the 12-step fellowship that you were in reached out and was there for you.
Oh, man, I was a good addict, right?
Oh, good boy.
Right? If one isn't, is one enough, then, you know, I got to go in, all in.
Both feet, baby.
Right? If they
Both
tell feet. Me 90 meetings in 90 days, I'm going to just go to meetings every day, and I'm not going to put an end on it.
There you go.
And I went to meetings every day for just short of 2 years.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we talked about this before, the only thing you have to change is everything.
Everything.
And so for me, I didn't know how to live life on life's terms without some kind of chemicals,
yeah,
legal or illegal, or behaviors or codependency, or, you know, whatever, add it to the list.
List of coping mechanisms.
And so I had to go in, you know, and of course I can't go to the same meeting every day. So I had to go to like pretty much whatever meetings were out there.
Mm.
So I explored everything.
Nice.
Different cities once a month.
So the topic is, it kind of lends itself to this because you were an outsider,
right,
at one time. So the topic is from outsider to insider to helping people. Roger's on the phone from Southern California. Roger, how you doing, buddy?
God, I couldn't be any better. I love Stand By Me. I was rocking out to that while you were playing it.
And, yeah.
Happy birthday, Dave. That's huge.
Thank you, sir.
My sobriety date's the 12th as well, so it's kind of awesome. Neat. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Not the same month, but the same day.
Sure. Very sweet. Very cool.
12 is my magic number. It like comes up everywhere every day.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that. We've talked about that.
Mine too.
Yeah, cool.
Mine too.
So here's some.
You know what my sobriety date is?
What?
12/12.
Wow.
And it's all kinds of things happened in my 12th year of sobriety. 12 is a magic number.
Yeah, I mean, like everywhere I go, every time I look at the clock, it's like, you know, 5/12, 10/12.
Yep.
And 5/12 is my birthday, so it's like, you know.
The clock. Yep. It reminds me, a clock. Just saying clock reminds me of what time it is, Dave.
What time is it, Monty?
Well, let's see.
Is that a clock or bomb?
I don't know.
Oh, it's time for Dave and Monty's Icebreaker.
Get the shop back.
That's right. Have you heard about these hospitals that if you come in with a respiratory illness? So here's some respiratory illnesses: COPD, pneumonia, just good old can't breathe properly because I got a bad cold, right? Certainly COVID.
Bronchitis.
Yeah. But if you come into the hospital, the emergency room, they put a bag over your head. Have you heard about this? I could not believe this. So they have a bag, and it's got a little place where they can clip on a hose, right, in case you need oxygen. And they put this bag over your head, and they zip it up. Now, imagine this. You have a respiratory problem, and now you have a bag over your head.
Sounds like a torture.
Not a mask. A bag. I could not.
Not wearing a mask.
I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? And I guess there's some hospitals back east that are doing this and more following in line. Wait, they didn't even want any part of your head exposed? I don't get it, but I thought it was an interesting icebreaker. What do you think, listeners? Would you put a bag over your head to go to the hospital?
I wouldn't go to the hospital these days. Tell you that whole narrative is falling apart anyway.
Bag it.
Wow. Bag it and tag it.
Bag it and tag it. There you go.
All right. Well, that's our icebreaker for this week. <Da-da-da-da-da-da>. However, we got more. It's time for this.
It's time for
the Take 12 Recovery Radio Ask It Basket. That's right, where our listeners send in their questions about stuff.
Stuff and things.
Yeah. We have an avid listener. By the way, he's an old high school buddy of mine.
Really?
Yeah. And
is he live in Petaluma?
Yes. Yes, he does. Steve C. And
what's up, Steve?
And he listens all the time. In fact, he donates to the show Thank you, Steve, for doing that. This guy, he and I were real close growing up in high school, and been in my home many times, and with my folks and me, and we reconnected through.
We won't hold that against him.
Yeah,
yeah,
well, Steve?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just a great guy. He loves to help others, and he usually sends in a question or two. So this month it's no different. So he has two questions, Dave. Question number one, it starts out as a statement. After being arrested for drug use, there was a long period of time that I did things just to look good for when I had to meet with court-required drug testing and counseling people. And to save my career in nursing, throughout my life, telling lies was normal for me. This was part of how I was raised. My mother continues to live with unnecessary lies on a regular basis. About 5.5 months of this, I was exhibiting something changed inside me.
Is that 5 months ago?
About 5.5 months of this front, he says, I was exhibiting something changed inside of me. Honesty became important over being not honest. This was his personal story. But his question goes like this. How important is it for a person in recovery to be honest within oneself and with everything and everyone? What can help to achieve being honest after a life of regularly avoiding honesty? And I think he's concerned about his mom, right? So again, how important is it for a person in recovery to be honest within oneself and with everyone, everything and everyone? What can help to achieve being honest after a life of regularly avoiding honesty? Well, it's vitally important, right? It's the First in the How series, Honesty, Open Minded, and Willingness. So it's right up there. What can a person do to achieve honesty after being dishonest for so many years? Is it an easy answer?
Well, as Bob Newhart would say, just do it.
Just
stop it.
Stop lying.
Just stop lying.
Just stop lying.
Yeah, well, I think he knows the answer to that question himself already. But what he did for himself, I assume he's finding the value in
being
changing
honest.
His behaviors.
Yeah, sure.
The problem is with other people is, right, we all know this, we can't change anybody.
Nope.
All we can do is be an example and love them and pray for them, you know, that they make some changes.
I don't think change happens in a person unless
they want to change.
First of all, they got to see a need for it. Then secondly, it's unless God, and if they don't see a need for it, they've got to have an intervention of the Almighty in their life for them to even change their viewpoint.
Well, that kind of sounds like what happened to him. I'll just share a little piece of my story. So, this is probably, I don't know, it ended up being 4 years in. Years in, and I still had some, like, resentments I was hanging on to.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that I wanted or expected my family member to apologize for the things that they did, right?
Yeah.
And take responsibility. Well, through the whole process of my own recovery, you know, over the 4 years, I had come to the conclusion that I actually had to apply that part that says I have to forgive that person, not for them, but for me. And I either have to cut ties with that person or I have to accept that person for who they are and then do the best that I can to have a relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they didn't even remember things the same way that I did.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right?
Yeah.
They didn't know that they did anything wrong, right? They were just carrying on what they were taught when they were growing up from their parents. And so I had to make that choice, right? Am I going to love that person and work on that relationship, or am I going to just cut ties and just be like, you know, superficial, whatever? And it started out slowly where, you know, it was an email here or there, a phone call here or there, and it slowly built up. Now, you know, I talk to this person, what happens to be my mom, like once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I try to check in once a week.
And has she changed?
I think she's changed, but also we've found a little more common ground. I think she appreciates the person that I am and verbalizes it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can let some of that stuff go, or I have, right? And so when things come up that we may not agree on, I don't have to sit there and argue about it. I don't have to sit there and say, no, you're wrong, or, you know, whatever. I let it go. And I learned that through working through that process with the relationship with my wife.
Mm.
Right? Sometimes mm-hmm. you just got to listen, and you got to, you know, you don't always have to fix everything. And, you know, yeah, sometimes you just agree to disagree or whatever. I don't have to have, I don't have to have that battle anymore. I don't have to tear that person down in order to prove the point.
And even if they never change.
Even if they never change.
Right.
I mean, I yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Roger, so what is there, do you think there's anything that a person can do to help a person to avoid being dishonest? Or are we just going to have to work on how we accept them?
Ultimately, I have no power to change anybody or anything, so I have to operate in acceptance. But when it comes to me, much like Dave, you know, I was a pathological liar. I would lie about things when there was no reason to lie.
Mm-hmm.
And so honesty had to become something I really worked on. It says it's an essential ingredient in the program, so I took that to heart.
I need to have you speak up just a little bit because you're fading out on me.
Oh, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Yeah, so what I was saying was that, you know, I had to learn how to accept people, places, and things, whether I liked it or not.
Right.
You know, and I had to learn how to tell the truth, whether I liked it or not. And part of my nature was I was a liar. Mm. And all the other good things that go along with it. And the whole concept of contrary action and based on principle and the power of prayer, you know.
Right.
All that was essential ingredients for this guy to get clean and sober and stay that way and then become some kind of useful person that, that God could use to help somebody else.
My sponsor used to say, I'm a liar. Honest I am. Steve's second question is, what does it take for a person to want to really stop and actually stop using mind-altering substances?
Desperation.
There it is. Right?
Sick and tired of being sick and tired.
I mean, real desperation.
Right.
No more yeah buts, no but I'll be okay. No.
The desperation of a drowning man.
You know, sometimes yeah. Woman. They talk about the, sometimes you have a high bottom, sometimes you have a low bottom. And
right.
It's sometimes, some people have to lose everything 5 times
mm-hmm.
before they go, maybe there's something else going on here.
It takes what it takes is really the answer to that.
Whatever it takes.
It takes what it takes. It, you know, and ultimately, whether we call them high bottom, low bottom, it's not circumstances. It's ultimately a decision. You know, it's a decision that I'm sick and it doesn't matter where I am or what's going on. It's I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
I am absolutely desperate to change. And only then can you get willingness and open-mindedness and some humility and honesty.
I'm having trouble with my soundboard. I don't know what's going on. Okay, that's better. Well, I don't know if that answers your questions to the degree that you wanted them answered, Steve. But I do think they're both right, Dave and Roger, that you're not going to be able to change mom. You're not going to be able to what you are able to do is love her unconditionally. I don't mean in a codependent manner, but I mean regardless of whether she ever gets honest or not, or anybody in your life for that matter, you have to, like you said, Dave, you have to make a decision. Either I'm going to chuck this relationship, or I'm going to make a decision. This is who the person is at this moment. I'm going to love them anyway, and I'm going to hang in there with them.
Well, there was something that always sticks in the back of my mind that kind of changed things for me. And this was even back when I was in my, you know, back in the day in my old life, in my addiction. I was working for this contractor in San Francisco, and he says, are you in so-and-so's son? And I was like, why? And they're like, well, because all they do is talk highly about you and positive, and they're proud of you. And
wow.
I'm like, are we talking about the same person?
Interesting.
So it was interesting that, you know, gave me a different insight to kind of stick in the back burner,
right,
in the back filing cabinet. Like, you know, maybe things aren't actually always how they seem to be.
Sure.
Right? We don't know the whole story all the time. And again, that goes back to a lot of the people in our lives, they're just operating on conditioning from their upbringing. And so it just kind of passes on from generation to generation until, like what I did is I tried to draw the line in the sand and say enough is enough.
Mm.
And tried not to pass that, continue that on down and through my family. So.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Well, there you have it. There's the Ask It Basket for this week. We're going to take a break and come back with the topic from outsider to insider to helping others. What do we actually mean by that? Don't go away. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Laura C., and you've tuned in to Take12Radio.com on your internet dial, the home of recovery, talk radio, and positive music.
Admitting the exact nature of our wrongs in step 5 is absolutely essential to recovery. But what about admitting the exact nature of something that's so right? Well, proudly sponsoring Take 12 Recovery Radio, Exact Nature products are made with exactitude, a combination of can-do attitude and commitment to providing premium quality products to help you in your sober journey. All Exact Nature products are independently tested for quality and purity. Learn more at exactnature.com. And as a Take 12 Recovery Radio listener, use the code TAKE12 and you'll receive a 20% discount on your order. Exactnature.com? Exactly.
Hey, check it out. You can now access all of our shows from a variety of podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcast, Stitcher, YouTube, Podomatic, and Player FM. Simply search for Take 12 Recovery Radio, and you'll be tuned into the best in recovery broadcast journalism. Also available at Take12Radio.com.
And now, back to more Solutions for Life Today with Dave Fleming and the Monty Man.
That's right. Welcome back to the show. You've tuned in to the Take 12 Recovery Radio's production of Entitled to Overcome Solutions for Life Today. Dave, CADC Level 2, is in the studio. Roger is on the phone. The topic this week, from outsider to insider to helping others. Many of us felt on the outside when we first walked in the rooms of recovery, or we feel on the outside regardless of we're in. Some of you people that are listening now aren't even in recovery. But you feel like an outsider. I know there's nothing more debilitating than feeling like you're alone in the midst of a whole bunch of people. We're coming up. We got Thanksgiving coming up, and a lot of people are going to be visiting with relatives. There maybe none of their side of the family are going to be there, and they're going to be smack dab in the middle of in-laws that they may or may not have a good relationship with, and you're going to feel very alone. And it's going to be very uncomfortable. I hear those stories all the time around the holidays within our 12-step support meetings. But going from being on the outside to being part of the inside, and then ultimately what that leads you to. Dave, you wanted to share on this, celebrating 17 years of sobriety, but you didn't always feel like an insider. You felt like an outsider too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it took me a long time to even like get it or be, you know, sick and tired of being sick and tired and tried every other possible way, right? Because
mm-hmm.
I was, you know, like many people are out there, it's like, I admit that I have no control. Are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not in control of anything, right?
Yeah.
Because you look back at your life and like things that I've been through, and it's like, especially when you're, you know, growing up, you know, you as a kid, you have no control of anything, right? You have to do what everyone else says. And through everything that I've been through, it's like, there's no way that I'm going to let anybody or anything control me. That was in my mind. That's what I was thinking. And I had this concept, you know, that people talk about alcoholics and addicts, and it's like, thing comes to my mind is like, I'm not that guy living under the bridge in the refrigerator box, right? I got a job. I am functional. So
you weren't identifying with what you were
hearing.
How
could I be an addict or an alcoholic? I can stop anytime I want.
So you were buying.
I choose to do what I'm doing.
So you were buying into the stigma that you were hearing around the rooms, that you got to be the guy with the paper bag over the bottle.
I never even really made it to the rooms.
Oh, okay.
And the little bit of experience I did have was, you know, my buddy Greg kind of introduced me to NA a long time ago, and never really realized that that's kind of how the foundation started. But we would just go to these dances on the weekends, right, all over the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
and you know, go hang out with people and meet girls, you know.
Oh, the NA dances.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how you got introduced to.
Yeah.
The people in the
that's
rooms?
How I got introduced to like NA and AA, and I mean, I sat through meetings, and I don't even, you know, it's one of those things where it just it went in. Right. But mm-hmm. I wasn't hearing anything. Mm-hmm. I was just, you know, waiting till, are they done yet? You know, so we can get on with. And so that was kind of the introduction. And I heard some of the information and, you know, so just life experience, you know.
Yeah.
Media and movies and whatever else you want to add in there. You know, it's the addict or the alcoholic is that, you know, the bum on the street corner, you know, that can't hold a job and can't hold his water. And
so did you think that those people in those rooms must have had experienced that stuff, so that therefore I can't identify with them?
I didn't even think about that. So
why did you feel like an outsider
after all, you know, after trying to do things my way, right? You talked your friend there,
Steve. Yeah.
You know, the whole lying, you know, it wasn't necessarily always lying, but exaggerating the truth, you could say it's still lying, but that's, you know, right? Because we mm-hmm. we want people to like us, we want to fit in, or if someone thinks that we're a gangster or a thug or whatever, they're mm-hmm. scared of us. We don't necessarily dissuade them from thinking that. That's kind of how I live my life for many years. Like, I got to keep this front on. If someone thinks that I'm a certain way and it keeps them away,
right,
I'm gonna keep it up. Right. So I don't let anybody in and don't let anybody get to know who I am so I can tell them whatever story I want. Right. So I control my own life. I control my own destiny. I control everything. And so I make the choice on what I want to do. Well, then consequences started happening. Right. So I had probation. You got to go to meetings or treatment or whatever. And I started going to these meetings because I had to. And I remember the first time I walked into an AA meeting was in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin at the Alano Club. And it was back when they used to be able to smoke. And I walk Dems in.
Dems were the days.
Those were the days, right? You walk in and choke and, you know, cough up a lung for a week after that just from sitting there.
Right.
But anyway, when I was in there, the only thing I could think of is how the heck do these people stay sober when all they do is talk about drinking.
Drinking and drugging, yeah.
Right? And I'm like, what the, you know? And the thing was, is I wasn't ready to quit.
Mm-hmm.
I had the bottle under the seat of my truck, and mm-hmm. I left the meeting, and I got in the truck and drank and went home.
So
I just went to meetings because that was part of the requirement.
So you were an outsider on the inside. You were in there, but you were really out there.
Yeah, I was way out there. And so through things happening over the years, you know, I came to this thing where I was like, because I've always been a spiritual person, not a religious person. And so I would always say that probably the last 3 or 4 years of my addiction, I would say this prayer and I would be like, okay, if there is a God or a higher power out there and you want to work in my life, give me a sign. That was my prayer.
Right.
And I do that, you know, on a pretty regular basis. And looking back on things, I could pick out spots where there were signs, but I wasn't paying attention because I was looking for that, the movie, right, where there's all of a sudden this bolt of lightning or this,
right,
you know, the waters part or the burning bush talks or something like that, you know, and it's like it didn't happen like that.
You were looking for the signs and wonders.
Signs and wonders, yes. Yeah. And so I remember I went to treatment, you know, and then still I always felt like that proverbial, you know, they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous that I remember talking about, it's like feeling like you're alone in a room full of people.
Right.
Right. And I always felt like that. I never felt like I fit in anywhere. Like I was somewhere on this different level.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I couldn't relate to, you know, different people. It's like I couldn't find my place. Like, I wasn't into sports, and just the normal things that I see or hear people talking about, that's just not me, and right?
Yeah.
And so it's like the people that I hung around with were all probably 5 or 10 years older than me, and I was doing things outside of what normal people did when they were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came down to the point of being in recovery, it was like I didn't, you know, I reluctantly did some of the things that I had to do because I was on probation. And I went to treatment and I went to aftercare and I started drinking again because I wasn't ready to quit. Things didn't click, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't surrender. I talked about it, but I didn't actually do it because I didn't understand what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And then through a series of events, the last night that I drank, October 12th, 2004, probably a month or so earlier, I did that prayer, right?
Right.
Because I had this moment of clarity one day driving home from work. I sobered up for a couple of minutes on the way home and I just said that prayer. I said, okay, if there is a God out there, help me get back into treatment and if I can get some help, I'll make a go of it. And I'm not that guy that's going to go do 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 down the road. Okay. I'm going to turn left to go home. I turned right into the treatment center and I turned right into the treatment center. No, that's not me. I'm like, you got to, you know, catch me if you can kind of thing. Right.
Mm.
I got to have consequences. I got that allergy, you know, every time I drink, I break out in handcuffs.
Yeah.
Right. And so sure. That's what it takes for change to happen to me. And so that night I ended up in detox. I think I had a 0.40 or something that night. And I'm sitting in detox, and I vaguely remember them asking me how much I've been drinking, and I told them like a pint or so.
You were so honest.
Yeah.
Liar.
Wait, what do you mean? It's more like a gallon a day for probably the last year or two, yeah. Which like I should have been dead. And so while I was sitting in detox, I had this experience, this mm-hmm. spiritual experience. Like God met me. It wasn't like a light, huge light, boom. It was like someone flipped a switch. Flipped a light switch.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I'm sober. The obsession is gone. And now all of a sudden, I start like putting all these things together. Right? The day. Right?
Yeah.
12. My birthday's on 5/12. Then you got the 12 steps. 12 disciples. My bed number in detox was 24. The apartment I lived in was apartment 12. Just, you know, I could, big long list of things that all of a sudden it's like, boom.
They were there all the time, you were looking for the bigger, brighter bang.
Well,
right?
My brain was polluted and diseased.
Yeah.
And I still struggled with that whole thing when I, in the beginning, you know, it's like I get back to the jail and I had these like visions and like had this, like I was wide awake and I had this like commentary with basically the devil trying to suck me back in. And I would start reading scripture and praying and it finally went away. But I was like, okay, so the only thing I got to change is everything. So that popped back in my head. And I heard that probably a year or two earlier. And so I just said, okay, what does that look like? Do the opposite of what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing about the, you know, the concept of the disease and the control. And I looked at that again and the word disease. And I knew that diseases or illnesses can be reversed or cured. And so that's how I like put my foot in the door. I can take it from that concept because then I know I can do something about it and fix it. And so that's kind of how I began that whole process. Then I had to go and, you know, I isolate because I'm good at it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like I can hang out with my dog and my wife and, or myself and my dog or
sure.
myself. And it's no big deal.
My headphones are being weird.
Yeah.
Okay. So Roger, did you feel very much an outsider when you walked into the rooms or?
So, I went to the rooms because I was court mandated to go to the rooms, and it took three different times over the course of 11 years that I finally, you know, participated. And once I realized that I wasn't an outsider, when I started listening to people in the rooms and I started relating to people in the rooms, I started to become part of. But I remember vaguely... No, I remember vividly the first few months of my sobriety when I'd listen to someone share the things that went off in my mind were, well, that's nothing. I can one up that.
Right, right.
Or, oh my gosh, I can't beat that one.
Yeah.
So my brain was like Dave said, I had a really sick brain. And I had a great sponsor who would drive it into my head all the time. It's a program of action and change. And he'd look at me and say, Roger, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So I had pretty clear-cut instructions with the power of the, you know, prayer and the steps and God and fellowship. I really hung on to it and became an insider, you know, an insider that wanted to be an insider. And I wanted to be an insider that went outside and carried the message.
Right.
Not just alcoholics.
I can really identify, Dave, what you were saying about, you know, not identifying with people. I mean, I was like, I was never into sports. I didn't talk race cars. You know, I didn't do hunting. I didn't, had no love for firearms necessarily. Wasn't against them. I just didn't have an attraction to them. things that guys did even growing up. I just wasn't interested in that stuff, you know. And so then when I got to the rooms, those things were still being talked about, right? And I, except for the sobriety was a part of it. There, of course, there was what I heard when I first got there was lots of war stories. I didn't know that's what they were called back then.
Right, right.
But like you, I'm like, man, all these guys are doing is talking about booze. and you know, and so, you know, that actually interests me. Because it kind of fed something, even though I wasn't using it at the time, it kind of gave me that, you know, that rush, right? That war stories can give you.
Right.
But everything else, I couldn't identify with what anybody was talking about. So I would sit in a room and just be quiet, right? And I think for me, I didn't start feeling like an insider until I actually started applying and implementing the steps with a sponsor.
Right. There is a... you know, I know there's probably some people listening out there that struggle with meetings or, you know, social anxiety and things. You know, and what I did in the beginning is I had to stick my toe in the water, mm-hmm. and so I would go to meetings, and right as they were starting, I'd walk in the door and sit in the back row.
Yeah,
and same thing at church. Sit in the back row.
Easy exit.
And
right?
Then as soon as they smack the gavel or you know, mm-hmm. I'm out the door. And I did that for probably a year before I started like going out for coffee and that. But in that, I, you know, got involved, like Roger's talking about. Like I started chairing meetings. I started taking a meeting into the treatment center that I was at on Saturdays. I found out that there was, you know, a need for a meeting on a night there wasn't a meeting. So I started one, you know, and it went very well, and
you became an insider right. By doing service work,
right? And that was all that part of, like, the only thing you got to change is everything is doing the opposite of what I was doing before,
right?
And I've learned through that process that's what I needed to do to change. And when I really felt like I was accepted, you know, I have to say, man, it's like I remember. Vividly, like my first year when I go into an NA meeting, and in the area where I was at, we made a big deal out of medallions, right? And so my year, every meeting I went to, which is like every day, I went and got a chip from, right? Because that was like a huge thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that I did that at, it was an NA meeting, and a person came up, gave me my chip, said a little something, and the next thing I know, there's like another person. There was like 10 people lined up to say how something that I said or something that I did to help them to improve their recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And it blew me away.
Did you have any idea?
And I was like, now, I mean, this is like, you know, this is like what I needed. This is what we all need. We all need to be someone to tell us that we're doing a good job.
Right.
Right. You know, the first time I remember into this one meeting, and I walk in and there's this guy, he's like 6'8", big old biker dude. Walk in the door and I stick my hand out. He's a greeter, you know, and he's like, bats my hand away and gives me the big bear hug. And I'm like, whoa, what kind of meeting is this? But reality is like, that's what I was missing in my life.
Yeah.
You know, that was one part that I was missing.
Yeah.
Which is what God knew that I needed that. So to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew from there.
So it's a progress, a thing of progression. I mean, but to get anything moving, you got to start with one foot in front of the other. You both have done that, and you've been doing it for a very long time now. The bottom line, this topic was that from outside to inside, now helping others. You're doing that, right? Did you have any idea the magnitude that your life was having on others until those people started telling you?
No, and it, you know, that was a big, meaningful episode. But when it really sunk in, is, and I told this story before, when I started that meeting on a Thanksgiving, we had a gratitude meeting, and we had this guy come in, and after the meeting, he came up and said, he didn't talk during the meeting, and he said, thanks, you know, I really related to what you guys were saying. And to tell you the truth, I was on my way to go kill myself before I came to this meeting.
And, wow.
And
what a turnaround.
Now I don't want to, you know, I have some hope. So I gave him my business card, and I said, look, call me if you need anything. And I didn't hear from the guy for like at least a year. And I get a phone call, and this guy's like, well, I don't know why I'm calling you, but I found your card in my wallet. And I said, you call him because you need help. And I, you know, I helped him out get into a program. It was just a church that was nearby that, you know, was helping addicts out. They'd live there and, you know, kind of, and have them do work with people in the neighborhood or whatever. But that was like that one, that was like that, that's happened to me three times. If it only happened once, I realized that that is the whole reason that I stay sober. If I could help one person, right?
Yeah.
And most of the time, we don't even know who we help.
That is so true. I remember years ago, before we had remodeled the studio and done any of that work, and it was just a big gutted garage, an NBC affiliate came out here, and I think the second picture on the wall, Dave, you can see it down there.
Yep.
Channel 16 was out here.
Yep.
And the guy asked me, he said, what's this, after he got all done with the interview, he says, what's this really all about? I mean, really, let's get down to the bottom line. And the only thing that could come to my mind was just exactly what you said. I said, it's about the one. If we can help one person by doing this, and the entire time we do this, it's worth it.
Right.
It's worth every bit of energy that we put into this, no matter how long it takes, even if it's just one guy.
Right.
Because you don't know what impact that guy's going to have. He may have an impact on thousands because you had an impact on him. You know,
it's so powerful.
Yeah. Roger, did you have any idea? I mean,
no.
The impact that you would have. I mean, you know, a lot of people down in Southern California and other places as well.
No, I flat out did not know.
Yeah.
Certainly in the beginning. And you know, what's interesting is you said it's about the one. Well, you know, Jesus was the great shepherd. And he left the 99 to find the one. You know, it's the model that we were given.
Right.
I've come to realize that in helping, you know, program is done one-on-one, even though the fellowship is a group. And so I've realized that when I'm doing God's will, there's a wholeness inside of me and a feeling that I cannot describe, because I know that I know that I know that I'm doing the Lord's will, not my will, which is the battle that I came into. In addiction, I mean, you know, I didn't want to do God's will. I wanted to do mine, and I couldn't do that without changing my mind with some mind-altering substance. So when people, it's funny because when people come up to me and share with me after I spoke or whatever it is, it's weird, money, Dave. It's weird. I'm humbled, and yet I'm so moved that I get emotional. It's an interesting. Thing.
Right.
I realize, and I tell them, it's not about me, and thank you for saying that. I greatly appreciate it. But this is all about what God wants me to do. And if I'm delivering his message and you received it, I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
Right.
Good stuff, guys. We are out of time. Dave, closing thoughts on the topic of from outsider to insider to helping others.
Just on that last part about helping others, and we didn't really touch on the other part that we were going to talk about. Step 10 is like doing that end of the day thing,
right?
Is reflecting on the positive things that we're doing. I think we're too, I think many of us in the programs were too, it's too easy for us to focus on the negative. So we got to make sure that we focus on the positive.
Especially today.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's all about love and forgiveness.
Amen.
Roger, any closing thoughts?
No, I think Dave just said it all. You know, it's all about love and forgiveness. You know, it's like God commanded us to forgive one another. So at the end of the day, at the 10th step, if I'm not able to forgive one another, I've got to remember that the Father in heaven is not going to forgive me. And that I need straight forward talk like that, because that's like, oh, yep, you're right. Thank you. So I need to make amends or do whatever I need to do.
Well, here's a God shot. Our closing song is by John McAndrew. And interestingly enough, it's entitled "If You Can't Forgive," and I just love it when God wraps something up, and you guys just did the segue right into the song. That blows my mind when that happens.
Well, I think everything that we talked about today kind of flowed together.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah,
I'd love to take credit for it, guys, but it wasn't me.
Right, right. All righty, folks. Listen, if you've got a question for the Ask It Basket, please don't hesitate to email us at take12radio@comcast.net. That's the word take, the number 12, radio@comcast.net. And we'll bring it on Solutions for Life today with Dave Fleming, entitled to Overcome. And here is John McAndrew to close us out with his song, If You Can't Forgive. Here's John.
Sitting by the sea, tears rolling down his wind-worn cheeks. I hold my hand out, I ask him, can I help? He says, help me by listening to the story I tell. He said, my heart is full of anger, bitterness and fear. That's why I'm an old man, full of all these tears. And he said, empty your heart of all its bitterness. If you're angry at someone, then it's time to forgive and fill it with love and a little gentleness. 'Cause you can't go on living. I know you've been hurt, son, and your hurt runs deep. But you don't have to end up an old man like me. Said I sat here full of rage for all these years. 'Cause nobody told me what I'm telling you here. You said empty. Forgive and fill it with love and a little gentleness, 'cause you can't go on living if you can't forgive. It says you don't go on living if you can't, if you can't forgive. Then he stood up, put his arm on me. He said, promise me one thing before you leave, that you'll empty your heart of all its bitterness. If you're angry at someone, then it's time to forgive and fill it with love and a little gentleness. 'Cause you can't go on living if you can't forgive. He says you don't go on living, You can't go on living, he said. It just isn't living if you can't, if you can't forgive.
The Recovery Sounds of Mr. John McAndrew. Visit his website at johnmcandrew.com. Hey, listen, are you feeling like an outsider? We've been there. Come on into the inside. Trust God, clean house, and help others. And you'll be well on your way. It's something to think about. Hey, this is the Monty Man. And until our next broadcast, may I remind you that because of God's great grace and love for you, you are entitled to overcome.
This has been a broadcast of KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.